Welcome to part two of our conversation with Bridget Marquardt about the haunted Playboy Mansion.
Do you think there's permanent ghostly residents of the mansion, or is it a lot of kind of coming and going, almost as one would do in real life?
Good question. I mean, I think it's coming and going probably because I didn't have any like consistent thing. Like, it's not like I always saw her standing in my doorway. I just saw it that one time. But I think that there's like a lot of different things going on there. Like I said, the game house is always, I always got like a really weird feeling out there, and I didn't like being out there by myself. And turns out housekeeping never wanted to go out there by themselves either. They'd always ask for either security or a butler to go with them. And they said that doors would slam on their own, the video games would start playing on their own, mm-hmm. and they just did not like it out there.
That's interesting. I mean, it just kind of, so how would you describe the feeling in that room if you had, I mean, obviously things turning on and off by themselves is creepy enough, but if you had to say just, you know, the emotion of the room, how would you describe it?
For some reason, that room, and it's not attached to the house, it's a separate room. It's a, like a separate little like house, mm-hmm. its own little cottage thing off to the side. It had a very foreboding feeling, very heavy inside, and I always felt like I was being watched in there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I mean, it makes you wonder, you know, is it some weird, creepy ghost guys that just went to the game room and they just want to hang out at the Playboy Mansion? So it would be the same feeling if you were getting leered at in real life by the creepy guy just kind of staring through the window.
If it was a real person, yeah. Oh my gosh, staring through the window, that'd be so scary.
I mean, it's almost that same sort of thing. I mean, was that the only place on the property that kind of had an uneasy feeling to it in terms of when it was, you know, of ghostly things?
I think so. I'm trying to like think about all the rooms in the house.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it was weird to walk through the basement because it was always kind of dark. It was dimly lit. It wasn't dark. Like there was, and you never knew if there was anybody else down there kind of, and it was very big. But I feel like that's just because it's a basement, you know, it kind of has those vibes to it. I would say the game house is the spookiest room.
Interesting.
Definitely.
Now, obviously, you have your stories of your experiences and your friends, of course, who were there as well. What are some of the other experiences that you've heard maybe second or third hand over the years that have stood out to you about the property?
Well, one of them, that Brian Alea, he was, I forget what his title is, but he was like in charge of all the events, and he was also like in charge of all the butlers and that kind of thing. And he was waiting for, they usually did a lot of on-camera meetings or interviews in what they called the library or Hef's office. And so one of the executives was doing an interview in the library. And so they were waiting for him to get done because they had to turn everything around and get ready for every Friday, Saturday, Sunday night is buffet, dinner, and a movie. So this is Friday night. So they needed to get ready for the buffet, dinner, and a movie, which kind of transforms the living room into like a theater. And so they were waiting for him to get done so that they could start pulling out the projector and rearranging the furniture and all that kind of stuff. And the door was just locked and not coming out. And the meeting was supposed to be done a long time ago. And Brian kept waiting. And so finally he called security and he was like, "What time is this meeting supposed to be over?" And they're like, "Oh, it's over. He left." And Brian was like, "Well, wait a minute, the door is locked and you can only lock it from the inside unless you have keys from the outside, but nobody would lock it from the outside." So he thought, well, there's another door that goes straight to the outside on the other side of the room. So maybe he forgot to unlock the door that's in the house and just went out the back. Mm-hmm. So he goes outside to that back door and tries to get in, and that's locked too. So the room is completely locked. So he asked security, "Can you come up with the keys to unlock this room?" And so security comes up and they're like, "Okay, we're here with the keys and stuff." And Brian goes to walk over there and the door is open. And he was like, "Wait, I swear this was just closed. This was locked."
Yeah.
And it was open.
Wow.
So I thought that was a pretty cool story. I'm trying to think if I've heard other things. I mean, I've heard people just say little things. Like I remember somebody saying that they were staying when I had that experience in that room, somebody was telling me that they had spent the night. This was one of Hef's older friends, had spent the night in that room, and they like heard voices while they were in the shower, and they thought that was really weird. When I told the social secretaries about the woman that I had seen standing in my doorway, and that who I thought it was, they said, "Oh, that's interesting, because she was always told the per." So Joni was the woman that I would see in the doorway. They said Joni was always told that she also looked like Mrs. Letts. So then that put like a twist into things, because I'm like, oh, well, then that's really weird.
Yeah.
But she was dressed too modern to be like Mrs. Letts.
Sure.
I think.
Sure. So when you had the experiences that you had, I mean, did you go to Hef and say, hey, listen to this story?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell him things that happened, and he just kind of would laugh it off. He was a good sport about all of that stuff, mm-hmm. and I don't feel like he denied it, but I don't think he was necessarily a big believer either.
Interesting. So do you think that he never really, I mean, because it's interesting when we talk about hauntings of someone who's empathic or sensitive picking up on things that someone who is not sensitive or empathic, that they could just kind of, you know, do that, play along, be a good sport. But if they're not experiencing it, then it's hard to convince them that it's actually happening. With over the years, I'm sure, you know, many people have probably shared experiences with him. Did he ever say to you that he had anything, any experiences himself in the mansion?
No, he said he didn't. But I also feel like it's sort of like my grandma syndrome, where like maybe things he just brushed off and like,
yeah,
was in denial or something.
Sure. It's like it just goes on so frequently, it doesn't even, you know, faze him. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. But I did, I do feel like, and I haven't been to the mansion since Hef has passed away, but I do feel like he's probably still there.
That's what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you, you know, I wonder, I mean, obviously, if he had a choice of a place to go, that would likely be it. Has anyone, or have you heard any stories of anyone having any sort of experiences there that may, you know, kind of validate that theory?
No, because it's under a major renovation, so nobody really lives there.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who bought it also owns the house next door. And as far as I know, they live still in the house next door, because the house is being like gutted.
Mm-hmm.
There's some aerial views of it, you wouldn't even recognize it anymore.
Oh, wow.
So, and I'm sure that doesn't sit well with Hef.
Sure.
But I just have a feeling that he's there. I don't know. It's just my personal feeling. But he never wanted to leave that house. Like every time we were going to travel and go somewhere, he always couldn't wait to get home, or he always felt like home was better. And it was always like a struggle to get him to travel. Like, oh, we're going to Paris. Yeah, I'd rather be here, though. You know, like he just loved, it was his Shangri-La, and that's what he would say. And he loved being there, and he loved having all his friends over and stuff. And so I just feel like if anyone didn't leave somewhere, yeah, it was him and that house.
Did he ever say anything about it, you know, as he was getting older? And just, you know, kind of contemplating mortality of, you know, some point, you know, he knew he was going to pass. He was getting older. Did he ever say anything like that? Like, when I go, I'm sticking around here. What did he have any, you know, belief on that or any opinions?
I don't know, because when I tried to go up to visit him the last like year and a half or 2 years of his life, when I knew he wasn't feeling so well, mm-hmm, and they wouldn't let me come up. There were like gatekeepers that would not let me see him. And so I don't know how he felt at the end. But I will say, after he passed, I was upset because I didn't get to say goodbye. And I'd tried a million times to go up there. And I also did not get invited to the funeral, which I was upset about. So I felt like I had no goodbye and no closure.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, one morning, I woke up and I had just had a dream about him, but it was a dream unlike any other dream I'd ever had in my entire life. I was going up to the mansion, and when you pull up to the mansion gate, there's this rock that you talk to, there's a speaker in it, and you talk to security. And I remember like talking to security and them letting me up. But yet, as I was driving up, I could feel that there was nobody there anymore, and it was like abandoned. Mm-hmm. And then I walked into the mansion, and it was not lit like it normally is. Like, it was kind of dark, and it felt dustier than normal. Mm-hmm. And the music was still playing. He always played, and I felt like this was really creepy. I felt like it was creepy at the time, but he would play, like, you know, very 1930s, 1940s music. Yeah. Like Moonlight Serenade and stuff like that.
It's almost like Haunted Mansion-ish.
Yes. So, you know, that would be playing like as people were rolling in for dinner and that kind of stuff. So when I walk in this dream, that music's playing, and somehow, like, I know that the butlers want me to wait in the what we call the Mediterranean room. It's kind of like a breakfast room. Mm-hmm. But there's no butlers, but there are, you know, it's a dream. Yeah, so it's not really making that much sense. But the light is on in that room. So I just somehow know that I'm supposed to go in there to wait for him. And I'm waiting. And then all of a sudden I hear him come running down the stairs, and he has his arms wide, and he says, "My darling," just like he used to say. And he gives me the biggest hug. And I could smell his cologne. I could feel the silkiness of his smoking jacket. I could feel everything. Like, it was like a dream with, like, all the senses. Mm-hmm. It was so strange. And it just really, and I asked him how he was doing, and he said he was doing fine, like, great. And he was smiling, and he just seemed so happy. And I woke up, and I remember thinking, that wasn't just a dream.
Yeah.
Like, that was, it was almost like I could still smell the cologne and stuff. Like, there was something more than a dream in that dream. And I haven't really had anything like that since. I've had something a little bit close, which was about my dog, who also passed away, like, almost 1 year ago, 1 year ago tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I've had one dream about her that was sort of similar, but not quite as real like that. But that one was so real. I really felt like I had been in the mansion. Yeah. And that I gave Hef a hug. I it just is so real, unlike anything I've ever experienced.
And do you think that's probably what he would have liked to have done had his minders and such not, you know, kind of kept you away those last couple of years? That this is really him being able to do what he wanted to do?
Absolutely, because Hef was always super welcoming to all of his ex-girlfriends, anybody who had been in his life. Like, he loved it. Like, he'd be so excited if an old girlfriend showed up, and he would jump up and give the big laugh, just like he gave me, and put his arms around him and give him a big hug. And, like, it was just what he did the entire, I lived there for 7 years, and anytime somebody came up who was from his past or whatever, he was so excited and so happy. And I fully believe that he would have wanted me to come up there and see him. And I fully believe that he was saying goodbye too.
That wraps up our conversation with Bridget Marquardt. A big thank you to her for joining us and sharing all those stories with us on today's episode of the program. Be sure to check out her podcast, Ghost Magnet, with Bridget Marquardt. You can get that wherever you download podcasts. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
In today's world, planning ahead isn't always top of mind, but not having life insurance can leave families facing difficult financial uncertainty during already emotional times. In many cases, loved ones are left managing expenses, debts, or long-term obligations without a clear plan in place. Life insurance is one way to help provide financial security and support when it's needed most. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy, and it's 100% online. You can get a quote within seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and coverage options are flexible with up to $3 million available, and some policies starting at around $30 a month. Ethos has also earned strong customer feedback, with a 4.9 out of 5-star rating on Trustpilot, based on more than 5,500 reviews as of August 2026. Help protect your family with life insurance through Ethos. Get your instant quote today at ethos.com. That's ETHOS.com. Application times and rates may vary.